From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Donald Trump has formally ended U.S. participation in a multinational nuclear agreement with Iran.
The fact is, this was a horrible, one-sided deal that should have never, ever been made. It didn't bring calm. It didn't bring peace. And it never will.
The president said the U.S. was immediately reinstating all Iran-related sanctions it waived as part of the so-called Joint Comprehensive Plan of Agreement. He said sanctions relief brought more, not less, tension.
After the sanctions were lifted, the dictatorship used its new funds to build nuclear-capable missiles, support terrorism, and cause havoc throughout the Middle East and beyond.
Mr. Trump did leave the door open for a new possible agreement with Iran. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani said his government would try to remain committed to the existing pact with the remaining five signatories. And he denounced the U.S. decision, which he said proves the U.S. does not respect international treaties. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu welcomed the U.S. decision, even as he said Tehran continues to build missiles to eventually carry nuclear warheads.
This is why Israel thinks that President Trump did an historic move.
Gulf Arab states also welcomed the move, but the UN, European Union, and several other nations expressed alarm and disappointment at the U.S. decision. The International Monetary Fund said Central and Southern Africa are at risk of debt distress, the result of large deficit and heavy borrowing. Selassie Abebe is the IMF Director for Africa.
In countries, particularly oil exporters, other natural commodity exporters, what we've seen is a pronounced increase in debt in the last couple of years.
Abebe called for fiscal consolidation. This is VOA News. Syrian state media late Tuesday said Israel struck a military outpost near Damascus, claiming its air defenses destroyed two incoming missiles. Sana'a said the alleged attack was carried out in Kiswa, an area known to have numerous Syrian bases. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said nine pro-government fighters were killed in the strike. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is in North Korea for a second time in 6 weeks, preparing for a possible meeting between President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Mr. Trump made mention of it as he announced the end of the U.S. participation in the Iran nuclear agreement.
The location is picked, the time and date, everything is picked, and we look forward to have a very great success. We think relationships are building with North Korea. We'll see how it all works out. Maybe it will, maybe it won't.
According to South Korean officials, Pompeo is expected to secure the release of three detained Americans held by Pyongyang. The trip follows Mr. Kim's second meeting in 2 months with China's President Xi Jinping, who spoke by phone with Mr. Trump and urged him to take Pyongyang's security concerns into account. The two leaders also agreed sanctions against the North should stay in place until it permanently dismantles its nuclear and missile programs. Meanwhile, in Tokyo, officials from China, South Korea, and Japan are meeting on North Korea. The three-way summit is the first of its kind in 3 years. Malaysians are casting ballots in a contest between Prime Minister Najib Razak's coalition and an opposition led by 92-year-old former leader Mahathir Mohamad. The scandal-tainted Mr. Najib's long-ruling Barisan Nasional is expected to prevail, although an election eve poll suggested its support slipping. The key to victory will be gaining a majority of the 222 seats in parliament. In Armenia, opposition leader Nikol Pashinyan Tuesday was elected by a parliament dominated by the ruling party as the country's prime minister, culminating in weeks of anti-government protests that forced the unexpected resignation of longtime politician Serzh Sarkisian. The U.S. Tuesday vowed to keep up pressure on the Venezuelan government until President Nicolas Maduro leaves power. U.S. U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley spoke in Washington to the Council of the Americas.
This was a beautiful country that now is in shambles because it all started with a government that wouldn't listen to its people.
Haley said Mr. Maduro must be isolated to the point where he gives in. She warned the systematic suppression of the Venezuelan people has become an active threat to the entire region. She spoke ahead of Venezuela's May 20th national election. The mayor of Cape Town, South Africa's second-largest city, has been ousted by the opposition Democratic Alliance over allegations of mismanagement and corruption, especially the handling of the city's water crisis. Patricia de Lille vowed to legally challenge her sacking. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Wednesday, May 9th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone and Liberia promised to strengthen bilateral ties as President Julius Maada Bio ends a one-day visit to Liberia.
We are a government that is committed to deepening bilateral relations with our neighbors. And our president, Julius Maada Bio, has made it very clear that the concentric circles of our foreign policy start with our neighbors.
Dr. Ali Kaba is Sierra Leone's foreign minister. Liberia's Electoral Commission has postponed today's by-election for President George Weah and Vice President Joel Howard Taylor's senatorial seats. Zimbabwe says it will make available copies of its voters' roll to political parties and individuals. And migrants have sued Italy for collaboration with Libyan Coast Guard.
While this operation has temporarily succeeded in stemming crossing, this has been done by the outsourcing of human rights violations to Libyan actors and has made migrants bear a human cost that is far too high.
Chris Hello is a co-founder of the Forensic Oceanography Project. Kenya takes steps to secure its border with Somalia. And we'll have a report about Cape Town's water crisis. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sierra Leone and Liberia have promised to strengthen their cooperation within the context of the Manu River Union, ECOWAS, and the African Union. This comes after President Julius Maada Bio concluded a one-day visit to Liberia on Tuesday. A Liberian government release said the two leaders discussed peace and security and economic development. Dr. Ali Kaba, Sierra Leone's foreign minister, says President Maada Bio extended an invitation to President George Weah to attend President Bio's inauguration this Saturday in Freetown.
The purpose of the visit was framed around the simple necessity of always reaching out to your neighbor, not just in times of need. You know, we are a government that is committed to deepening bilateral relations with our neighbors, and our president, Julius Maada Bio, has made it very clear that the concentric circles of our foreign policy start with our neighbors. Liberia and Sierra Leone are the founding fathers of the Manu River Union. We share borders, our people talk to each other, they intermarry, and whenever there are issues on any side of the border, it affects all of us. So we are, in effect, demonstrating goodwill towards our neighbors. And I must also say that on the part of the Liberian government and the president, they are also committed to the same thing, that we have to work together to deepen bilateral relations, strengthen our ties, revitalize the Manu River Union, build shared vision around which our people on both sides of the border can actually live their lives with full dignity and with the sense that government works for them. So today's meeting was not the beginning of the encounter between the two leaders, but just one important cornerstone at the time when we are getting ready for the inauguration of President Maada Bio on the 12th. And I know that President George Weah will be attending.
Sierra Leone and Liberia, the historical ties are very important, as you mentioned. We know that the former president of Liberia, Charles Taylor, has been found guilty in the war crimes court because of his alleged involvement in Sierra Leone. Do you think these two countries have gone past their wartime days?
Well, our president, Julius Maada Bio, made it very clear during the encounter with his counterpart that we are grateful for the fact that both countries have always stood up for each other. Remember that President Julius Maada Bio was in Monrovia during the height of the Liberian Civil War. That was a place that he served in the front line of duty. He put his life on the line to bring about peace in Liberia. So for us, really, today is an opportunity for the two leaders to look forward, to look at our shared vision above all the future that we want for our two countries.
Another commonality is the Manu River Union and also ECOWAS.
Yes.
In terms of regional trade within Manu River Union and ECOWAS, what was this one of the issues discussed between the two leaders?
Yes, remember, they've been talking, and meeting today is just an affirmation of what they both believe in. These are two leaders who have a fundamental sense of their mission, which is to make sure that we address the issues that affect the day-to-day lives of our people. And the Mano River Union is the bedrock of that effort. And beyond that, ECOWAS too. So they made a commitment to work together collaboratively, not just Mano River Union or ECOWAS, but African Union, the UN, other international multilateral agencies, so that we go there united in our purpose. And so what we are seeing as we look at these two leaders today is a more hopeful vision of our region.
Mr. Minister, thank you very much again. So nice to have you on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you so much. Glad to be with you today.
Dr. Ali Kaba is Sierra Leone's foreign minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Freetown. Liberia's Electoral Commission has postponed today's Wednesday's by-election for President George Weah and Vice President Juwa Howard Taylor's senatorial seats because of lack of adequate funding. National Elections Commission Chair Jerome Kokoya told a news conference Tuesday that the commission requested $2.5 million but got only $500,000 from the government. Finance Minister Samuel Twe reportedly said government could not commit $2.5 million for what he called insignificant by-election. Henry Flomo, chairperson or spokesperson for the National Elections Commission, says it's not clear when the by-elections will be held.
The commission decided it's not going to be held because the commission did not get the required funding to conduct the elections. The commission could not meet the mandate as per Article 37 of the 1986 Constitution.
How much money does the commission need or did you need to have this election?
Well, initially we came up with $3.9 million and the government rejected that. And finally, it was agreed that we would provide $2.77 million. But of that $2.77 million, only $500,000 has been provided. So that could not do all of the job, especially when it comes to the printing of ballot papers and prepacked materials.
The Minister of Finance, Mr. Samuel Towe, I'm reading where he referred to this election as insignificant by-election. Could that be responsible for the government not being able to give this money?
Well, I wouldn't say it, but after all, they came out and said they will commit $2.77 million of that. A portion of that was coming from the government and another portion coming from the international partners, especially UNDP and AFES. So initial amount from the government was $500,000, but that money came a little over a week ago, and it cannot underwrite all of the important aspects of these elections, especially when you talk about the payment of vendors, the printing of ballot papers, and that of, yes, ballot materials. So the commission, through its chairman today, called a press conference and informed the Liberian people that the commission would not be able to meet the deadline as per the Constitution. We received a notification from the Liberian Senate on the 13th of February. So if we do the math, May 13th will be 90 days. And the Constitution says we should be able to conduct a by-election within the 90 days. So a time that was drawn, and May 8th was selected for the elections. From our indications, we cannot meet this timeline, neither can we meet the timeline between now and May 13th. So it was important that the commission, through its chairman, Jerome Kokoya, inform the Liberian people.
What happens now? As you mentioned, this is a constitutional requirement. Not having the elections mean that the commission or the government might be in violation of the Constitution. And these elections were necessitated by the election of Senator George Weah as president and Juwa Howard Taylor as vice president. What happens to their seats in the Senate now?
According to the chairman of the commission today, he said as soon as government commits itself or pay the balance of the money that we'll be able to procure, for instance, ballot papers and other materials, the commission will ask the lawmakers to have an extension, but he said he's afraid that if he goes ahead as early as this time to ask the lawmakers and a day is given and without the cash, we could again run back to the lawmakers for another extension. So the commission will wait. Once the needed amount is provided to conduct the elections, the lawmaker will be informed to have an extension for these elections to be held.
Henry Flomo is spokesperson for the National Elections Commission of Liberia. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. Today is Wednesday, May 9th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barty, Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 minutes past the hour. Zimbabwe's Elections Commission says it will make available copies of the voters' roll to political parties and individuals participating in this year's general elections. But the commission says it does not yet have facilities for people to verify their names as they appear in the new voters' roll. Some political parties have failed over the years to access the voters' roll, which at one stage was believed to contain names of thousands of deceased Zimbabweans. But according to Commissioner Kubani Moyo, people are expected to physically inspect the voters' roll as they don't have the capacity to upload it online for easy accessibility.
It's a very good idea indeed, but we are not well prepared as a commission because we don't have a system that is networked all over the country for us to be able to achieve that. At the moment, we are going to rely on the traditional method where we'll place voters' rolls in particular polling stations where people can go and check physically. And if there's any need to make any corrections, they can be done after people have checked the physical. We are quite aware that there are issues that are being raised by people, some of them in diaspora, who are saying, how can I check my name when I'm in London or New York or wherever? But we don't have those systems in place at the moment to be able to do that. So we'll rely on the physical checking of the names.
So what about if, let's say, my name is not spelled correctly and there are certain anomalies? Can somebody go and physically check for me and then you take my request to actually rectify it?
Yes, I think it can be taken and then you can then write to the commission to requesting for an amendment or a correction of the misnomer. But what you can say at the moment that we encourage all Zimbabweans to physically go and check their names where they say they're going to register. We know that most Zimbabweans are here. Of course, there are a few that registered, but they will be away. We hope that they will be able to take the 10-day window period to be able to back home and correct that. That is all that's saying Zimbabwe might be out on whatever business.
Now, is the voters' roll going to be accessible to members of the public during the election period? So are parties going to be given copies of the voters' roll?
Yes, the parties are going to be buy from the commission the copies of the voters' roll. I think it's very cheap. It might be $10, I think, for a ward voters' roll, or 100 for a constituent voters' roll, or something like that. You can get a hard copy. You can also get a soft copy. That is a contesting political party. So it will be accessible to everyone. Even if you're an independent, you will also be allowed to buy a cup of favor, that's all.
Kubani Moyo is a member of Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission. He spoke with Gabe Dube of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Kenya's interior minister says the country's security challenges are the result of its border with unstable regimes. Mwenda Njoka's comments came after seven Kenyan soldiers were killed earlier this week in Moyale, near Kenya's border with Ethiopia, where Kenya is now giving refuge to affected people. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Kenya's capital, Nairobi.
Speaking exclusively to VOA's Daybreak Africa, Mr. Mwenda Njoka says insecurity is a global threat, even though the instability of neighboring countries has been the major cause of insecurity in Kenya and especially in the borders. He says when Kenya hosts refugees, some of them come in as criminals and others armed, thus threatening the security.
We are a country that is surrounded by a very unstable regime. And here I'm talking about South Sudan, I'm talking about the DRC, which is also affected. Although there is Uganda buffer, but it affect us. I'm talking about Somalia, of course, Ethiopia nowadays. All those are unstable regimes which contribute, one, to people fleeing from their countries to our country. Because it's, so with the fact that we are hosting refugees shows that we are secure and safe. But we also have challenges. Now, that also, unfortunately, it feeds in itself in the sense that also having more refugees create an element of insecurity in the sense that some of these refugees come with illegal arms. Others are also people of dubious background.
He, however, says that the internal security of the nation is commendable and that the Kenyan police are doing well in ensuring safety of its citizens.
You've seen at least we've not had any attack in a major town in a very long time. So that shows you that our forces are working, both internally and externally. So I can tell you clearly, the police, the intelligence, the military, they've done a lot of work to ensure that Kenya is very safe. Of course, there are still challenges that we have to deal with, like every other country, including US, UK. The other day, they were being abused. Terrorism is a problem. Everywhere, it's not just in Kenya.
In Moyale, border of Kenya and Ethiopia, there is war among the Ethiopians, and now the country is experiencing massive entrance of thousands of refugees who are fleeing war in Ethiopia. This comes a day after Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and Ethiopian new Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, on his first visit to Kenya, signed an agreement that is envisioned to have economic and security benefits for the citizens. The two acknowledged cross-border security challenges intensified by vulnerable communities as a hindrance to sustain peace.
To matters of security, and indeed most importantly, to matters integration and how we can work together strongly and boldly to bring not just our two countries much closer together, but also how we can work together to bring the continent closer together with a clear understanding that the future of this continent lies in our unity.
We have had a discussion which deeply tells how we're brothers. We have been discussing about bilateral issue. We have been discussing about regional issue and as well global issue. We have simply agreed to forget the simple bilateral issues to focus on our history.
Early last week, in his statement of the State of the Nation address, President Uhuru Kenyatta promised to ensure there is peace in Kenyan borders. And a few days later, the Kenyan soldiers were murdered by Al-Shabaab in Somalia. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo from Nairobi, Kenya.
Italy's collaboration with Libya to stop migrants from crossing the Mediterranean is facing a legal challenge. A lawsuit filed in the European Court of Human Rights asserts that Italy's work with the Libyan Coast Guard has forced thousands of people to return to Libya against their will, subjecting them to inhumane conditions. Sabina Castofranco has more for VOA from Rome.
17 Nigerian migrants who survived a deadly sea crossing in November last year have filed the lawsuit. They say Italy is violating their human rights by supporting Libyan efforts to stop migrant boats from reaching Europe. By blocking the boats, the plaintiffs argue, Italy and Libya force thousands of would-be migrants to face inhumane conditions, torture, and beatings in Africa. The co-founder of the Forensic Oceanography Project, Chris Heller, prepared a report presented as part of the case. He said the Libyan government behaved carelessly to intercept migrants and return them to Libya. At least 20 drowned in the incident last November. He said that Italy and the European Union essentially re-established the Libyan Coast Guard, which was operationally non-existent until the end of 2017, in order to pull migrants back to Libya with the consent and knowledge of the Italian authorities.
Italy has, with the EU, exercised strategic and operational control over the Libyan Coast Guard, which has operated as its proxy to intercept migrants.
Heller said the Libyan Coast Guard intercepted more than 20,000 migrants in 2017. Italy and the European Union, he said, implemented their policy with the full knowledge of the violent and criminal behavior of the Libyan Coast Guard and of the fate of extreme forms of violence and exploitation that has awaited many of those returned to Libya.
While this operation has temporarily succeeded in stemming crossing, this has been done by the outsourcing of human rights violations to Libyan actors and has made migrants bear a human cost that is far too high.
The Italian government has not yet reacted to the lawsuit, which was filed last week. While the legal challenge may represent the biggest hope for change for the many migrants, the lengthy process could take up to 3 years. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
The international media and climate change experts continue to focus on Cape Town as the South African city enters its fourth year of drought. But one of the world's leading water agencies says slow-burning droughts have been devastating other parts of Africa to a much greater degree, with some countries suffering water and food shortages. The Water Aid Organization works to bring clean water to some of the world's poorest communities, including in Southern Africa. Darren Taylor reports.
Jonathan Farr leads Water Aid's work on climate change and water security.
We should remember that there are already 844 million people in the world who lack basic access to water. More than 8 million of those people live in South Africa.
The policy analyst says water crises caused by the El Niño weather pattern have gripped Southern Africa since 2015.
This is the worst drought to hit the region for 35 years. By the beginning of last year, it affected about 41 million people in countries including Mozambique, Madagascar, Malawi, Zambia, and of course South Africa.
Farr says some of these places are much worse off than Cape Town.
In 2016, the government of Madagascar declared a state of emergency in southern Madagascar, with almost a million people facing alarming levels of hunger. In Malawi, there's been a state of national disaster declared, with 25 out of 28 parts of the country having severe food shortages.
Mozambique, too, is enduring water restrictions that are far more severe than those in Cape Town.
The government in Maputo called an amber alert, and that means that as well as a public awareness and campaign about reducing water use, there's ongoing total restrictions of water supply for agriculture and energy.
Farr says water security is threatened across Africa because of hotter, drier weather and other reasons.
Lots of people are moving from rural communities to cities. The cities aren't ready for this huge influx of people, and so there's increasing demand for water, but in a very small area. And so it does mean there's huge pressures on particular water basins. And so the authorities, you know, even those who are reacting well, are dealing with a very serious problem.
He says many southern African countries are not managing their water properly.
They've just been losing a lot of water, whether that's through poor infrastructure, lack of maintenance, or people tapping into the system illegally. These authorities governing the water have not been taking account of their water, not collecting revenues, which means they're losing money, which means they can't afford to keep up the maintenance.
This creates a big gap that Water Aid does its best to fill.
So we're working with those communities to improve their water supplies, whether that's building boreholes or linking them up to improve quality water so they can withstand climate problems and also, you know, improve their lives and their prosperity.
FAR's organization cooperates with governments, engineers and architects to assess threats to water supplies. It also helps to build feasible infrastructure, like in Maputo, where it's assisting Mozambicans to tap into previously unused water basins near the city. Water Aid wants to see the urgency in Cape Town spread and for states to prioritize water security. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Sierra Leone and Liberia have promised to strengthen their cooperation within the context of the Manu Rebel Union, ECOWAS, and the African Union. This comes after President Julius Mada Bio concluded a one-day visit to Liberia on Tuesday. And that is it for this Wednesday, May 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Butt in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good Wednesday.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora.
believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.